Welcome back to Mad Props. This is episode 59 of Mad Props, and today we have a very special guest to me, Damon St. Cloud. Damon St. Cloud was the first guest on my offstage series almost 10 years ago. This is actually the first conversation we're having that wasn't over text, at least, in that 10-year span. So I'm very happy about this. I'm very excited for this. I'm excited to catch up with him. This is going to be really exciting, and I can't wait for you guys to hear how the interview goes. Damon and I met through offstage. So when I started offstage, there was a bigger artist. You're going to hear more about this in the interview, so I'm not going to get too much into it. But there was a bigger artist that was going to be a part of offstage. And then they decided not to do it anymore. So we had to pivot, and we're like, what can we do? Like, who can we bring on? And I heard Damon on Music Choice of all places. I really loved the song. It was Charlie Bartlett that I heard. I reached out to him. Et so facto, here we are. 10 years later, he was on offstage. And I can't wait for you guys to hear about what we did, how it went for him, how it went for me, and all that stuff. Damon is he's a hip-hop artist. He's from New Jersey. Since offstage, he's done so much more though. He's a DJ now. He's running like all these different ways for artists to become bigger. You're gonna hear more about him. I don't want to really give away too much about that because you're gonna hear a lot more about it. But he runs his own recording studio. He works for BET. All this stuff we're gonna talk about. He has a new song we're gonna talk about. All this stuff. It's gonna be really great. Since we have this time for a second, if you haven't ever seen Offstage, it's on the Schnabel Studios YouTube page. If you've never seen Offstage, for me, just go check it out. Go check it out, see what it's all about. I know there was its problems with Offstage. We've had Offstage podcasts before, like specific to Offstage, which I've always considered bringing back. They were about production, all the, whatever. But I know, like, overall, it was successful for me because it got me my feet wet in the industry. It had its successes, it had its failures, it had its learning experiences. But it's on the Schnabel Studios YouTube page. They're all for free. You can go watch them now. So if you have some time, you want to go watch it, I would greatly appreciate it because it's kind of my baby. And I want to get back into doing film, and I haven't been able to. So that's all I have so far. But I'm not going to let this go for too long. I want to get right to the Damon St. Cloud interview because it was really good. We had some really good conversations, really good topics we talked about. So I don't want to take up any more time. Let's get to this interview. Run those credits. This is Mad Props.
Hey, it's Damon St. Cloud. Let's start the show.
Damon, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here. If people don't know, this is like a 10-year anniversary. Almost, it's technically 9-year anniversary of the first time we met. But thank you for coming on and catching up and talking about yourself. And I'm going to talk a little bit about our experience with Offstage and stuff like that. But let's start with, how are you? How are you doing? How have the last 10 years treated you?
Oh, Chris, thank you. It's been good. I know, like, so from like 9 years from when we first shot the documentary, just about me being an artist, which I really appreciate you reaching out and doing that. I remember when I first like got the email, my dad actually got the email. He was like, yo, someone from like Connecticut, like, Chris, like, yo, he wants you to do the show, he's gonna record you. I was in school at the time, so like my mind was like in 5 different places. So I was like, okay, all right, cool. And then, since then, I just been like, obviously continue school, I graduated. I was able to get like, an internship at Complex. Now I work at BET on the music programming side. So like I still work in music, like producing music, writing, have a studio. So things have like, I've like grown a lot. Like I've grown like a lot since then from like, after like my sophomore year, I'm pretty sure I was failing like 2 classes. I had like 16 credits, but I was able to like turn stuff around. I was able to graduate like a half a semester early. And, kind of really turn turn things around, like as far as like my grades, my focus, and just kind of like taking myself a bit more like seriously. So like that's, it's crazy, like we would just be like 10 years, 9 years, it seems like it's gonna be so long. It feels like you're gonna get like the Star Wars monologue and like,
yeah,
100 years ago and all that stuff. But like in reality, it's ill because it's like it's gone by so fast. And even like how we were discussing earlier, like even the past 4 years since the pandemic, like it being 2024 now, 2020 feels like just yesterday, but it was like four years ago. Yeah. And we're still here and healthy and thriving. So man, I'm grateful.
It is crazy to think that the world shut down 4 years ago. Like we're coming up on the 4 year anniversary. It's in a couple weeks. Like it's just crazy to think that happened. That Tom Hanks and Donovan Mitchell got sick almost 4 years ago, coming up in a couple weeks, which is just crazy. So we first met through Offstage, which people are, if this is your first time listening, this is kind of like started as a product of that and then became its own thing. But Offstage was a documentary series that I started, and I was telling you a little bit off air, but I was going to save it for this. That was the first film, anything I did after college. I graduated the year we shot it. So like I went out, I bought a camera, and I was like, all right, I need to keep my skills sharp. Let's do a documentary. Let's see how it is. And actually, I'm about to tell you some stuff you probably don't even know about it. So you were the first episode, but you were not the first option. So listen to this. This all started because we were in contact with a like major player at the time. Should I just say it? Who cares? So they were playing. It was Imagine Dragons at MetLife Stadium. and
no competition, so, right?
we're getting ready for it and we're getting prepared. And coming up on the date, and we get an email, and they said, actually, we're done. We're backing out of it. And I actually was there, and I was talking to a friend of mine who I did a lot of filming with. And I was like, honestly, that's crazy because, like, this, you know, they're a big band and stuff like that. But there's so many behind-the-scenes documentaries of the big bands. Like, we're just going to get lost in the fray. It's like, what if we found people that are up and coming and we can, like, highlight people that are up and coming and that are just like starting to build their own careers and stuff like that. And that's when we started looking. And then we found you from the channel Music Choice. Mm-hmm. So Music Choice was playing your song. I was like, this song's pretty sweet. Like, who is it? I looked into it, and that's where it rolled from. Got the email, emailed you. We set it up. And then you became the first episode of that series, which was a series of 10. So there's a little behind the scenes for you that you didn't even realize that it all started with Imagine Dragons.
No, I guess like no competition, right?
I mean, listen, I think having you on and doing it with you and doing it the way we did was much better. Not better as in like obviously having somebody with a big following would have also gave us more views than we did, although we did really well. I mean, your documentary itself got into like 10 film festivals. The next one got into like 15 film. We did pretty well with what we did, but I just think it would have just gotten lost in the fray. I really do. I say that all the time. It just would have gotten lost in the fray. Just another behind the scenes of a big band, and they're going to tell us we have to cut this, we have to cut that, we have to cut this, we have to cut that. And it would have just been 10 minutes of them sitting on a couch, playing an acoustic, getting ready for the show, and then walking out. And it would have been a 30-minute video. So I felt like we got to do a lot more. And, yeah, I think we got to do a lot more. And another thing with yours that didn't happen with any other ones is I had some people that helped me produce that one. It was people I went to school with that were very – into everything. And the biggest thing that there's one regret I really have with that, one big regret, and it was they told me to cut a lot of stuff, and I look back and I'm like, I shouldn't have cut anything. So we had to cut some stuff because like we were on certain campuses, we were in certain places, and we didn't have the rights to the when we went to Southern Connecticut State and we went all over homecoming, they wouldn't sign any documents for us to use it. And I was just like, who cares? Let's just do it anyway. And then the people that are producing are like, well, you'll get sued. It's like, sued for what? Like, this was all out of my pocket. We don't have anything promoted. Like, what are they going to sue for? Like, we'll just cover it with, we'll blur it out. And I always wish I just put that stuff in there, because we had a lot of fun there. But there's a little behind the scenes for you of this whole thing. Like, what was your reaction? Like, you said that I emailed you and 1,000 things went through your head. So what was your reaction when some random person said, I want to shoot a documentary with you?
Yeah, so my reaction first was I was excited to do the documentary. I was looking forward to it, and it was kind of like a I made it moment. So it was cool just seeing, like, you know, my parents really proud of something I accomplished with my music. At the time, I knew I was good at music, but music was not necessarily my focus or my priority. My priority was always, like, school, especially at that time. So it was an exciting time. I, like, told all my friends. I told every friend I know to, like, show up. Like, 3 showed up, you know what I'm saying? And, like, really rolled with me and stuff like that. And they're still my friends to this day. And it was kind of like I already felt like a celebrity. I already felt like I made it, because it was like, oh shoot, like I just did this song and things are just kind of happening. And so it was cool. Like I said, my friends that were there to this day, like my friend Vincent, he's still with me to this day. He runs the studio with me. Literally, I was with one of my other friends, Steve, literally yesterday. We were just at the Legacy Game Classic. It's like a big HBCU initiative they have here in Newark, New Jersey. So we were just out yesterday. I literally talked to everyone, like, still. So, you know, that's something that's also, like, bonded our friendship. At the time, it was just like, I was just trying to get everyone to go. I was asking, like, every girl that was in my phone, like, hey, you, like, you want to go to Connecticut? And, like, maybe, like, one showed up and everything like that. So it was ill. I appreciate it. It was cool. It was fun.
Yeah, you're talking about getting people to show up. So this was one thing I learned from that experience. Okay. Don't run the show yourself. Just record it. So I had to set up the venue, the opening acts, everything. Which I just thought was a regular thing. And then I was talking to another filmmaker about it. They're like, no. Like, he should have picked the show the person's going to. First time I ever did it. What are you going to do? But that, by the way, that place, the space, no longer exists. It's gone now. It's no longer with us. So the space is gone. And yeah. But so you talked about a little bit running a studio called The Kitchen, right? That's the name of the studio that you run. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so The Kitchen, it was founded by E. Vincent, who was with us at the shoot. He founded it along with an artist named Lethal III. And it's like an all-encompassing, like, music studio in Union, New Jersey. Ironically, it's like right by the school I graduated from, Keene University. And we started the studio during the pandemic, actually. Like, right when the doors opened, the pandemic hit. And so we kind of, like, sat for a minute, and now with everything, you know, back open starting, like, 2022, we've just been up and running. And we've been, like, recording artists, booking interviews for artists, and we also have, like, 2 events that we do. One is called Pass the Aux. Pass the Aux is an event I created to help artists get used to the idea of their music being played, like, in a public space. You know, upcoming artists usually don't have that opportunity where, like, you just hear your music and you just hear an influx of people hearing your music at the same time, unless you're performing as well. So here at The Kitchen, what we do is we invite artists to pull up, and they play their music, they get feedback, and then they pass the aux, the next artist goes and plays their music, and so on and so forth. And it's just a way to continue to just, like, build the community and just give people something to do on a Thursday or Friday night that's music related. And then the second event that we do at The Kitchen is one called Who's Cooking Next. It's our open mic series. We currently do it with a company called Bunker, with another person who was at the shoot, the DJ in KNX. He was there. He was my DJ for the event. So now he owns a store on Halsey Street in Newark called Bunker. It's also like a DJ academy. And what we do there is an open mic series, and artists from like all over the tri-state, like they show up and they just perform and kind of rock out. And it's kind of like, it's just like a party for real. So we like just throw a party every month, and then artists perform. And now we're gearing up for a tour. And right now my job is just handling all the events and then recording artists as well, producing with artists. And yeah, we're right in Union, New Jersey, and we've been rocking and rolling since like 2022, since everything's been like official tissue, you know, with the pandemic thing.
You had a new song drop, and we'll get to that in a second. So from the filming that we did to now, what made you kind of go more behind the scenes? Because I feel like the music, not that it slowed down, it just came from a different direction now. So why did you kind of move behind the scenes of the music instead of in front of the mic?
Yeah, and I totally, the output of my music, like, totally slowed down. Because at the time when I was in school, I think I kind of like, I would make a lot of music, but I will always ask for an opinion before I drop music. And if the opinion wasn't positive, I would take it at face value. And I would take it a little too literal. And that's a part of growing up, to kind of know, like, you do have to have your own agenda a bit set, and your own intention set. So just like with anything else in life, like, if there's a no, you kind of just pivot to you adapt. All right. So at that time, I just wasn't aware that, yo, like, even if someone says something's not going to work, you still see it through, because that's your job as an artist. So at that time, I was still making music, still recording, still producing, still going to school and everything like that. But I really just had to mature in that way and realize, hey, if someone says this song sucks, it doesn't necessarily mean the song sucks. They might have had a bad day that day. They might be hungry. They might forget this whole conversation in the next 30 minutes. You got to just literally put your music out. So that was just like a process for me. And now I kind of through like just trial and error, like not just put out music and it's kind of chill.
Yeah. I feel that. I feel the same way. And when I do something like a podcast or a video or anything that I do in my own bubble here, I have like a handful, I would say maybe five or six people that I truly, truly trust their opinion on it. Like, this is the opinion I want to hear from. And everyone, like, I'll send it to somebody else. Like, say I'll send it to somebody I talk to occasionally, or somebody that I'm kind of friends with, just to see what they think as well, because I want outside voices. But the reason I trust those opinions so much is because they're going to give me the feedback I need. Like, the one thing there's two things that suck when you're trying to do something, when you're trying to create. There's the yes men that'll say, yeah, it's great. You can't have those, because you're never going to be able to produce anything. There's also the people that don't give you, they'll say like, yeah, this isn't that good, but they won't give you why it's not good. Like, I am completely fine if somebody came to me and said, your hosting skills are terrible. You do terrible. If they said, but this is why, I would like that feedback, because you're kind of learning about, it helps you grow. Like, you're learning about what you do wrong, and it helps you grow to do better. But if you're just like, you stink, like if it's just an internet troll, you suck. It's like, well, why? Like, why do I suck? Like, what do you have to say? And that's usually just because someone doesn't like you or something like that. But those are the two that you can't have in that circle, are the people that are just yes, 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 it's great, it's great, it's great. And the people that are like, it's not good, but don't give you an explanation why. So I understand what you're saying. Like, when I was first starting, it's the same thing. Like, I took the face value, it's not good or it is good, and just rolled with it. Mm-hmm. And it didn't help me learn why it wasn't good or why it was good. Like, why did you enjoy that? What was good about it? Instead of just saying, yeah, it's good. Like, did you enjoy the flow? Did you enjoy the cadence? Did you enjoy like the structure? Like, what was good about it? So once you learn, like, don't take the feedback and take what you think is correct and what you don't think is correct and move into it. And that's when I feel like you're creating really builds and grows.
Yeah. So that was just like kind of the process I needed to kind of endure, and the test I needed to endure to kind of get to the point where I was like, okay, I know what my audience like expects from me, and I know what people like from me, as an artist and from a production standpoint, what kind of stories they want to hear, what kind of production, like music production they want to hear, how they want to hear my voice, and then how to kind of like meld that into what I'm trying to like maybe show them or teach them creatively. And so it was just like a very, very like, it was like a very interesting, like almost like an A&R process, but without like an A&R label or nothing like that, just like life A&Ring. But in the meantime, like I always stayed active in my like career. So I always stayed like, whether it's like doing shows, staying on stage. So I'm like, I'm always staying sharp there, or just like producing, just applying myself and just always looking to like come up. Yeah, I'm not gonna stop that.
So are you still out doing live shows even though the new music isn't flowing as much? And like I said, you do have a new song. We'll get to that next. But are you still going out there doing shows? Are you doing more like open mics? Like what kind of shows are you doing?
Yeah, of course. I do an open mic with, there's a company called Out of This World, and it's run by Yaya Fire. So she has a bunch of different like open mic series. So I'm like always like going to her shows, like supporting that. And then I just like Eventbrite, like look for stuff. And then now like once I put that effort out, people like will reach out to me like, hey, can you perform? Or hey, can you like do this for us? Or hey, can you DJ for our event? So on and so forth. So it really hasn't like stopped as far as like me performing. And once I like put it out there, it usually comes back in some way, shape, or form. So that's been cool.
So is Street Punks, which is your new song, the return to music? Like, are you gonna start making more new songs? Are you making a new album? I know you wrote to me that it was in a short film called What the Hell, which I tried looking for. I think I found the trailer for it. I don't know if I found the actual, it does that sound right? There's a trailer on YouTube for it. I can't remember what the production company. Okay. So I found the trailer for it, which we'll link in the description below. But is this like going to be an album coming soon? Like new music coming soon? Was this just a one-off?
Yeah. So with Street Punks, this is actually the second single I've released. And this song is definitely like, there's definitely like a project coming. And like I said, just got picked up for this short comedy film called What the Hell, created by like Manville TV and Brandon Tyler. They just like, we once again, like I put the song out, I put the video out, and reached out to me like, yo, this is dope. Can we add it to the film? So I was like, yeah, sure. And like, you know, it sounds like a cool idea. And then as far as like with music, yeah. So I've been like putting out music. I've been DJing. It's funny. Like I've gotten a lot of like different messages of people. Like people will see me like, yo, like what's up? When you gonna put out your music or like so on and so forth. So it was kind of like me just being consistent and just saying, okay, if you're an artist, you gotta be an artist. So the Street Punks, I really made the song because at the time when I wrote the song, it was like a frustrating time in America. It was a frustrating time in the world. We talk a lot of like police brutality, and at the time, that was, not that that's not what bothered me, that always bothers me, but what was aggravating me the most was how it is narrated in the news. So in the news, when a black child was a victim of something, they will always be villainized. But in the news, if a child from another race was a perpetrator of something, they will always be humanized. So that's why the choruses go, Street Punks never gave 3 Fs, they just want to wreak havoc and roll weed up. Because that's kind of how I feel, as though black victims are how their narrative is created around in the news. Whether you look at like Mike Brown or Trayvon Martin or anything like that, they always kind of pivot to what made this person a quote unquote bad person, and not really focusing on their humanity. So that is really, I really didn't even care about necessarily music or my own career, anything like that, or what I could gain from it. I mean, that's cool when I'm like going to sleep and I'm about to go dream and I'm thinking of Grammys and stuff. Like, that's great. But like, I was really just, I would say aggravated. I was aggravated at the news. And that's kind of, I just needed to say that, you know.
Yeah.
That
song, that was important. And speaking of what you're saying, the villainization and the hero, the I don't even know his name because I don't care to really learn it, but the dude that shot the people in Michigan became like a right-wing hero, and he's like millions of followers now. The dude's a murderer. Murdered people, and people look at him like he's a hero, but it is the message is great. I will say, very catchy hook. The hook is extremely catchy. I was listening to it. I listened to it a couple months ago or something and I shared it on Schnabel Studios page and stuff like that, and then I was listening to it again. I was like, dude, it's catchy. It definitely is. It's a catchy song. It gets stuck in your head. It's an earworm for sure. It really is. And so what was the like the concept behind the video itself? Like, it's comical. It's clearly a comical type video and stuff like that. What was the process about creating that?
Yeah, so the story in the video is just simple. It's just a security guard running around chasing a protagonist version of Masidi. He's chasing this dude all around this office space, and the dude is just trying to escape and just get out and just break free and just be free. And so really what I wanted to do was just take a lighthearted approach on a very serious topic, because I think it's very important that you do show honest and real depictions of what's going on in the world so that the world pays attention. But what I learned in my creative process and just learning more about, you know, the business of entertainment, you know, unfortunately, being African-American, a lot of what we sell content-wise is trauma, is Black trauma, because a lot of times that's all we really have for our stories that is, you know, commodifiable and monetizable. You know, is our pain, is our suffering. So I did not want to take that approach in the music video, because I didn't want to trauma dump or trauma shock people before it come up. You know, I want to come up. I don't want to sell out my people to come up. So I said, okay, I'm gonna, take a lighthearted comedic approach. I kind of like got some inspiration from like Martin Lawrence. I got some inspiration from like Tyler Perry. I got some inspiration from Eddie Murphy. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to take something that, you know, they did, which is play more than one character in the film. Also, because I couldn't get no one to like come and do the film. Oh, like, yeah, I got it. Sounds good. Then I'm like, once again, they're all doing their own thing. So I was like, damn, this is like a 2 weeks. And I'm like, I'm going to do it myself. So the basic concept of the video is just like it's just a cat and mouse. It's just a cat and mouse between the security guard and this figure who we're gonna learn more about. But this protagonist, he's just trying to run away and just trying to be free. And it's just something funny to laugh at and still get the point of the song, you know?
Yeah, I think taking a comical approach is great, because when you yell something, if the group of people that you're talking about here, if you yell something back at them, they're just going to yell back at you. There's no talking about it. So if you take the comical approach, it's almost like a turn the other cheek. Like, you know, I hear what you're saying, but like, I'm not gonna come back with violence like you would. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to come back with something funny, something entertaining, but I'm still going to get that message out there, and you're still going to see it. So like, taking that comical approach is, and you've done multiple videos, not like this. You've did another video that was, what was the name of the video you did? I think it was in 2020.
Okay.
Right, yeah, right. So, you did the song.
It was actually literally called 2020. So it was, it was kind of like my take on, you know, shout out to like Uncle Murda from New York and Skills from VA. You know, they always do like these wrap ups on like, yo, the endless stuff that happened in the year. So, you know, that year, I mean, we ain't know if we was going to see it 2021 or 2022. We ain't know what was going to happen. So I was like, I gotta say something. But that song was just called, like, Happy New Year 2020. The origin of that song, I was just actually going to do, like, a little, like, promo campaign where I just took other people's beats and I rapped over it. So originally, I rapped over this song called Fuck the World by Brent Faiyaz, an R&B singer from a DMV. And that's what I wrote to it. And then it was just so ill, I was like, I probably should make my own beat. So I put that out, I got a good response, but then I made my own beat. And then just out of, like, boredom, for real. Like, the music video only just came out of boredom and just me being confined to my bedroom at the time. And I put that out, and, you know, it was just something for myself just to like, all right, I did that. I got that down, yeah.
I appreciate you helping me out there. I was like, I remember this, but I can't remember what it was called. Like, I was trying so hard to, like, get it out of you, because I was like, it exists. I know it exists. I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah, it's called Happy New Year 2020. Yeah. Nah, for sure. It's all good.
All right, so I'm going to take a left turn here, because there is something I'm dying. I wanted to get the music stuff. I wanted to get, you know, got to let you promo yourself. You love Spider-Man. So I love that you love Spider-Man. People that are watching, I mean, just look at behind me, right? Like, Spider-Man all over the place. Yeah. Where does your love for Spider-Man come from, and how deep does it run?
Yes, my love for Spider-Man comes from just me being, like, a kid and, like, growing up, you know, going to movies like everybody else, and him being relatable. You know, there aren't too many superheroes whose story you can relate to, even just on a surface daily level. Just being like, okay, everyone knows what it's like to go to school. Spider-Man, he went to school. Like, not college, he was in high school, you know? Everyone knows what it's like to have a crush. Spider-Man had a crush, and, like, he was just not feeling him at all, and, like, until he became Spider-Man. Then he was like, ew, you know what I mean? Everyone has, like, you know, their parent. You know, he had his uncle, and I just remember as a kid, you know, always hearing that in my house, just, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. So, you know, Spider-Man, he was a human just as much as he was a hero. And, you know, I did, like, the back studies on it and just studying Stan Lee and his life and stuff like that. And I understand that, like, that was intentional, and that was part of his strategy for changing just the comic book game, was to human, instead of, like, making superheroes, he really made heroes that are human with their stories. And so just growing up, I liked the Hulk, I liked Ghost Rider, but Spider-Man was, like, the dude that was like, okay, I can see myself being Spider-Man. You know, he had like a crafty, like, job with the mean boss and stuff
when
like that.
When he had one.
Yeah, when he had one, right? When he was blessed enough to have one. So, you know, I see my parents work every day. So it kind of was just like a way to kind of, like, see things from their lens too. Just seeing, like, what it's like to, like, work and all of that. And he was just cool. I mean, he was ill. He was a smart ass. He was just an ill dude, man.
So you're a Peter Parker guy over Miles Morales?
Nah. I'm Miles Morales all day. But it was like, even that, it was ill. Like, seeing that, even at the fact that they cared enough to, like, show some representation, you know, that was cool. Like, but I was, I went to go see Spider-Verse or something like that. But Miles Morales, all of that was dope. I mean, like, who doesn't want to be Spider-Man? Like, who can't relate to Spider-Man?
You know? The video games are doing Miles Morales super dirty. They're just doing him dirty. I don't. They're not taking him in the right direction, I don't think. I truly don't. I will say, I've never been. Are you a comics Spider-Man guy? More the movies, like the TV shows. Like, where do you get your Spider-Man from?
I mean, definitely, like, the movies, the shows, like, all of that. I definitely had the comic books, all the way from, like, the older ones and, like, the more of the new age ones. You know, I'm from New Jersey, from North Jersey specifically, so, like, I live right by New York City, so it's nothing to, like, go get a comic book. Even, like, I still go to, like, not Marvel Comics, it's a comic book store, like, right by
Midtown,
Times Square,
right? Midtown Comics.
Yeah, I go there at least 3 times.
I know that. I know Midtown Comics, trust me.
So, you know, like, I go to that second floor, and I just chill out. It's just like a place to, like, just decompress and just, like, it's ill. So I definitely was big into the comic books. I always gravitated towards the later published ones, like, kind of like the 90s looking ones. I really like the aesthetic and kind of like the darkness of them. Like, they have a very just more dark energy kind of to them. My favorite one is the is the collab one he did with Ghost Rider. So he has one like with, it's like Spider-Man and Ghost Rider. You know, they'd always have like go into each other's worlds and everything like that, and kind of like kill bad guys and all type of stuff and shot type of stuff. That was my favorite one. They had to defeat the Hobgoblin. They had to avenge some lady that like died and shit. So they just had to beat his ass.
When your two heroes come together, like your two favorite heroes come together, it's so exciting. Like, I don't know if you could see because it may cut off, but I have the. Can you see the one I'm pointing to or no? Should I take it down?
No, I can't.
I got you.
Cool.
Spider-Man and Invincible. Huge Invincible guy, huge Spider-Man guy, right? So when these two come together, because Kirkman went to. Was it Corey Walker or something? Like, whatever. Kirkman wrote the story of Spider-Man for a little bit and then wrote the, he obviously created Invincible. So they have, like, a combination. And it's one of those combinations you never thought was, like, Invincible is Image Comics. Like, he's not even Marvel. But when the comic comes together, you're like, dude, this is mind-blowing. So I understand. Like, you say the Ghost Rider. Like, a lot of people probably wouldn't say Ghost Rider, Spider-Man's my number one. But my number one series with Spider-Man is Spider-Man and Deadpool. Like, because I love both of them so much. And it was really good for a while, and then it kind of falls off a little bit.
They all do. You know, they all break our hearts.
I know. I'm sitting, like, there's a certain storyline. I don't remember exactly what it is. I'm sitting there, I'm like, read, I'm going. And then it hits this one comic, and it's like, this storyline just isn't as entertaining. And I can't imagine it was the same writer anymore, but that always breaks my heart when you're just so into it and then you get to a certain part, you're like,
yeah, you're just right there, but
are you still getting any of the comics or anything like that, or is that something you used to do and now you just kind of intake it through the rest of the media like everybody else with Spider-Man?
I'm pretty much like everybody else. I'm nothing special. I'm just like everybody else. I go to Midtown Comics, and I just go and read for the $3.99. But
You're still reading. A lot of people don't even read it. They play the game. They watch the movies. Yeah. But that's their extent of the knowledge.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I'm so focused and like locked into my work. I just kind of keep a tunnel vision. So if I'm not working, I take breaks out of my life, but like I'm so focused on my work that it's like my everything. It takes all my energy in a good way. Like I'm just
locked in. It takes priority. Oh, trust me, I understand. That's how I feel with this show that you're on right now. I can't tell you the countless times I've been up until 2-3 in the morning just editing clips or doing. I feel like I've had this conversation like 40 times this week about the social media aspect of this show. I can't stand the social media aspect of this show. Can't stand it. I work in social media. I can't stand it. But I know that's the way to do it. Like, that's how you really have to promote it. You have to put it on social media, let other eyes see it, and let other eyes get to it. Like, there's other ways to promote yourself, obviously. But, like, for podcasting right now, that is the number one way to get eyes on it. So I want our social media to look crisp. Like, if you go to the Instagram page, it doesn't have a ton of followers, but you go there, you scroll, everything is crisp. Everything has a thumbnail. Nothing's out of place. Like, it looks really clean. And it's because that's how you kind of have to do it these days. And I can't tell you the amount of times I'm up until 2 o'clock in the morning making clips, making graphics, putting stuff together, editing the episodes. Like I just locked into the whole thing on top of work. On top of work, you actually have to make money. Like this is what you're doing.
Yeah, it's definitely a grind. Doing all that, you definitely grinding. You're definitely working hard, man.
Yeah, and it's just because you have the passion and the love for it, right? Like you love what you're doing. You like one day I would hope that something like this could be what makes your living, right? Like what you're doing makes your living. So this is the time now to really grind and get it going and stuff like that. So you've promoted a couple things so far, past the aux, the kitchen, stuff like that. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Like anything else you want to promote? Anything else? Promote yourself. Plug yourself.
So, I mean, myself, Damon St. Cloud, but I'm working on right now, I'm pushing Street Punks. That's really the song I'm pushing right now. Just dropped another song called All Yours. I got a few songs that's gonna be coming out shortly, and right now that's really what we're gearing up for. Gearing up for the next tour. That's definitely gonna start in May. So what's the tour?
Is this like you're going to different cities? Are you staying around? Because you said it's in Union, New Jersey. Are you staying around that area? Where's this tour going?
Yeah, so it's gonna be in a few different cities. They're locking down their dates, kind of like how you said. Like, there's like work on one thing, and then you kind of trust like the company to work on everything else. So, right now we're looking at New Jersey, Chicago, Philly, Connecticut, and New York City. So it's gonna be like the five cities. Right now it's gonna be with The Kitchen. Got a tour coming up with another label called Sloppy Vinyl and our artist named Owen Jamez. And then I got another batch of shows coming up with an artist named Money Making Moose. And so, you know, since I started DJing as well. So ever since like that's kind of kicked off, people have just been reaching out to me. So I just did three shows in a row. That small tour with an artist named Akash. He had a song with Fetty Wap called Balenciaga. So I just did the domestic dates. So I was there. Me Boy Monty was there. He performed with us. And I just went out and rocked with them. And right now they're overseas. They're in Nepal and Dubai and just traveling all crazy. I just stay here and kind of like knock it down for work and everything like that. So once they get back, we're gonna be back on the road with them, but right now I'm putting all my energy into this tour with The Kitchen and with Sloppy Vinyl as well. And yeah, about to hit the road. It's looking like May, like early May. I'm gonna be
Chicago. Chicago is a great place for you to go. I love Chicago so much. It's such a beautiful city. It really is. That's one place I wouldn't mind ending up one day in my life is Chicago. Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful and stuff like that. What else, you got anything else? You can find Damon on Damon St. Cloud. There's an underscore in there, right? Where's the underscore?
Yeah, so Damon St. Cloud, then underscore on Instagram. You can find me on YouTube at Damon St. Cloud. Instagram, wherever you pretty much subscribe to content, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, X formerly known as Twitter.
How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the name X? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough because, I mean, there's so many X's. There's DMX. There's a lot of X's.
Like, great.
And when you say X, it's just such a, it's a letter. It's a letter. It has a lot of meanings. So, I mean, it's going to take a little minute for my mind to be programmed into X equals Twitter.
This is the most ridiculous part. If you go to your settings, right? Go to your settings and click settings. It doesn't say x.com. It says twitter.com/settings. Like, it's still twitter.com, which makes me think one day it's going to go back. I don't understand why change it to a letter. Like, I also didn't look into it, but like, I don't understand what the appeal, whatever.
The appeal sometimes is just like, I think from a design standpoint, it's just like the appeal of simplicity. And letters are like super simple. X is like, when it comes to like marketing, X is a very seductive letter. So it's just really meant to just appeal to your eyes, your ears, and your senses. And I think because we've grown up with Twitter and we're familiarized with it, it's kind of like, you know, you wake up and your cat becomes a dog. Your dog becomes a cat. It's just a bitch. that it's not gonna connect with. It's not gonna connect with us because it's not authentic to us. That brand is not authentic to us because it's the brand we know is like Twitter. It's like, you know, like when like your best friend starts acting brand new. Yo, why are you have this new random accent or whatever? Like, so I think that's why it hasn't really connected, because it's the Twitter space, you know, Twitter is like 10 years plus deep with this audience. So
more than that.
Yeah. So
it's been around since like 2006, I think.
Yeah. So to kind of call it X, I understand the sentiment from a design standpoint. And simple can be mistaken for broad. And that title is just a very broad title. And sometimes it does you a service, sometimes it does you a disservice. I think when it comes to implementing it into an already existing server, it may be a disservice because that server already has such a silent fan base. But rather, if it was a new server, which is a bit much of a risk, because you know who wants to upstart a server and a base and have to collect all that data, right? But from a marketing standpoint, from a community building standpoint, I think it probably will be simpler to do in the digital space because, or any space, you know, I change the name of a town. If I change the name of West Orange to like, you know, some random name, it'd be hard to find and locate. The GPS might not pick it up as fast. The word of mouth might not pick it up as fast. I think it's just it was a social experiment. And the people will tell you what they like and what they don't like. I feel like the people are kind of saying they like Twitter. So, you know, that's all you can really do, I feel like, as a creative.
But I don't think Elon Musk is going to bring it back, though. I think he wants it to be his own. He wants it to be his own. He wants it to be his thing, right? Like, he bought it. He paid all that money for it. He wants it to be his thing. How do you feel about musicians with social media? Like, how do you feel about, like, becoming a TikTok artist almost or something like that? I have very, very strong opinions on musicians and social media, but I want to hear yours first.
Yeah. So my opinion on artists becoming like, you know, pretty much like, almost like whether it's a TikTok or whatever new platform is gonna come into the game next.
Well, not TikTok anymore, right? Because the Universal Music thing.
We shut that shit down. We would have thought someone like Durant, you know, like it's like got him out of there. I think that, you know, there's like a pro and a con to it. I think I'll start with the con. The con is that it makes the game move a lot quicker, you know. So there's no, you know, now and forever are the same thing. No one's interested in potential. No one has time or interest to invest in potential. We only have time and interest to invest in facts and quantifiable facts. So that is a piece of the game that kind of makes everything fast, because it's not about just developing you for the next so and so years. It's how do we get the most out of this next 6 months, you know?
Yeah.
And let it decide. So I think the con of that is, you know, people's, you know, artists that do, you know, blow up organically or you know, through the energy that they build and the energy that they build through creating content, creating their vision, it can hit them really fast. If on the flip side, they're not necessarily prepared for media, if they're not prepared for their stage performance and how to perform at a high level, if they're not prepared as much as they think for the game because no one has pretty much prepared them, it's all about right now, you know, what can I, you know, I need to eat right now. I think the pro of it is because social media, right, is the attractiveness of social media is like it's like a decentralized space in our minds. It's like a decentralized space. Anyone could win. It's like a lottery ticket. Is that if you are hungry, you will find a way to eat. So, you know, no one necessarily will have to prepare your food for you. If you're hungry, you are going to find a way to eat. And so, you know, that's what we're seeing with artists that have, you know, blown up and or have put things out there into the world, have gotten positive responses, and then have figured out ways to build relationships with who they need to know to get what they want. I actually think it benefits labels a lot because when it comes to long-term stability, that's what record deals kind of tell you that they provide for you. And a lot of artists do want a record, even though everyone preaches independence, like artists do want record deals because artists want to be able to move out of their neighborhoods,
yeah,
get groceries and
become commercial. They want to become commercial. That's the overall goal, is not necessarily to sell out or anything like that, but to make money off of what you do. So this is the thing with like TikTok artists that I first of all, before I say anything, I applaud anyone that can take their art and make it something to live off of, something that is heard. Like same with this podcast, right? All I want is people to listen to it. So I completely commend that. I think the biggest problem with it though is now it's like, how do I make my song for TikTok? So it's, if you just really focus on 30 seconds of a 5-minute song, 4-minute song, or your song is a minute and a half long, because you're really focusing on, can I make a piece that someone can make a dance out of, that someone can put in the background of their videos? Can I say one line that becomes this trend that people put, like, it says something silly or something like that? And it takes away from the focus of the, not only the rest of that song, but, like, you're not going to see a complete album because you're trying to make TikTok songs. You're trying to make Instagram songs. So you're not even making like a full complete story. You're not telling a story with your music. Now that doesn't, you don't always have to do that. But when you have millions of artists that are all trying to do the same thing, it congests that like portion of music, and it takes away from the portion. Like, you don't always want to hear a song that's catchy with one hook and that's it. You want to hear a story. You want to hear about this. You want to hear about that. And it kind of congests the one thing, but also it takes away from album building. It takes, like, nobody, why would you listen to a full album? Why would you listen to a new artist's full album? It makes no sense to do it, because you know, like, if, especially if you heard it on TikTok. Like, if I heard that song on TikTok, why am I going to go listen to their album? I know what they were trying to do. And that's where I see, like, not to call out any, but that's what I saw. The big one that did it recently, and she is a big artist, but she kind of transferred her from making albums to making TikTok songs, was Meghan Trainor, who made 3 straight songs that were big TikTok trends. Good for her, right? She successfully did it. So, you know, congrats to her. But that's kind of what those songs were trying to do. Like, they were trying to just be in that space and be something that got millions and millions of views, because every view was another view for her song or another dollar in her pocket. So it's great because you make your money, but at the same time, musically, like creatively, it really does take away from it, because you have one end goal instead of like, I want to make this album that tells my story that can also make it like make me big. It's more of like, I'm going to make this one song, focus on 30 seconds. And that's what we need to really push. And then you see it when you watch these people's, like, you'll watch the artist's TikTok and they'll use the same 30 seconds over and over and over. There's nothing wrong with promoting your song that way. But when you're doing that and then you do a dance to try to make it a trend, or you do that and you try to make it like a meme, or, you know, like, you're trying to all this different stuff, it's clear that you just want that to get big on TikTok. So
and people, I think the idea that the audience is ignorant is a fallacy. Audiences are aware of when something is authentic, and the things that you have do see, I think for the most part, do have some type of authenticity to them, rather than the things that, you know, kind of go out quickly. It's usually because something's not connecting. But kind of like to the point you were making, and even to the point that I was making earlier, is it's a lot of what the game is about. And this moment is like, it's about right now. No one has time to think about a year from now or what is or potential. And so what it kind of does is, the way it hurts the artist, or whether it hurts storytelling or art or philosophy, is a lot of people that are maybe circles, triangles, rectangles, octagons, trying to fit into a square. And so that's where we're gonna as creatives and as storytellers have to be more creative in the storytelling, more creative in the way we connect with people, and more willing to take risks, because you know, it's like all things, it's a trend, but it's also engineering. So it's not really about, obviously us, we're a part of our perspective is because we come from a certain time and cost of engineering, of social engineering. So you know, the kids that are coming up now, whether they're, you know, ages from 6 to 12, they're coming up in a time of not completely different, because some things never change, but the approach is a completely different way of social engineering. You know,
yeah,
it's like basketball.
I was gonna say it's the artist is like, get big, then figure it out. It's not how does my music help me get big. It's get the following. Let's figure out the next step after that. Let's make this the first step. Let's get big. Let's blow up. I had someone I worked with once, and they came up to me, and I was like, "What is your career goals? What is your goal?" And the goal was, and you could tell this is a younger employee. They were like, "I just want to be famous." Like doing what? Like, what do you just? I don't know. I'll just blow up on something. It's like, that's the same thing with music, right? It's like, well, how are you going to promote your music? Well, I'll just keep putting it on TikTok. It's like, but what are you going to do to, like, I'm just going to hope it blows up on TikTok and then I'll be set. And it's just not the right road to go down. If you had it, like, I applaud the artists that have done that and then made a career out of it. Honestly, someone that did that was basically Lil Nas X, no? Like, he made a song for a video on Twitter. Because he wanted to fit the weird horse meme. For people that don't know, he made Old Town Road and put it in the back of a meme. It was like a horse running through with a guy standing on it. And it was like, come over. No, my parents aren't home meme. And it was him on the horse or something like that.
Like that Redemption was big at that time.
Yeah. And that's what it's about.
Yeah. So, that's a good example of how he used his creativity. Is a good example of, you know, granted, I don't know his situation, but at that time, but from what the way it was brought out, that is an example of, you know, how someone, you know, used their creativity to create some type of virality. But, you know, the reality is, even with songs and with music, much stuff goes viral, especially nowadays. Like I said, that's why I said, they have things appear decentralized. There is a level of organicness to it, but it takes a lot of money to promote a record. It takes a lot of marketing. So even when we say, oh, this person's blowing up right now, it's really the marketing strategy is blowing up right now. Or dang, this, you know, I was just having a conversation with one of my friends the other night about a R&B singer, and she was saying, dang, she kind of fell off a little bit because she's doing everything. She's doing a feature. She's doing everything. She's like, oh, she's underappreciated. And it's like, no, the marketing strategy has changed. The first song you heard might have had X amount of dollars attached to it. That doesn't guarantee that the next single or the next rollout or the next things will have X amount of dollars attached to it. And with social media and with these things, because it is such a free for all, there is a vested interest in a certain level of centralization, so that you see what companies want you to see. If they're promoting a artist or if they're promoting a movie or whatever, if they got to compete with the common person, the common person has to compete with them. They're gonna use the strongest asset that they have, which is money and relationships. So, you know, even with a lot, we see a lot of stuff going viral or anything like that, or how this artist is blowing up, a lot of times we have to look at it differently and understand that this marketing strategy is being executed. And that's kind of where, and I say that to say and kind of bring it back, is to, it kind of gives these kids a little bit of a fallacy on the work that they need to put in. Or what really goes, everything that goes into making things, moving groove, because you do think, okay, because a lot of times the story is the same. I just posted this and it just blew up and I just don't know what happened. And a lot of times that's just not the truth. It's just a lie.
Yeah.
And so a lot of kids that kind of like get this idea that you could just put something up and it's just going to go crazy. Sometimes that happens. But as we continue to, as these apps continue to grow, as data comes more important to companies and everything, a lot of times that's not, after a certain point, that's just not going to be the reality. There is going to be a lot more influence in not having a wide net of an audience, but having a very specific audience that comes to you for the specific thing. If you, it's going to be less about the number and more about the data. So if your specific audience comes to you for this specific thing and they come to you consistently for this specific thing, then you no matter what the number of that audience is, you have a business and something that you can work with. It's like creating your own music genre or something, right?
Yeah.
That is more leverageable than just, you know, a million, you know, something that just has such a wide net nowadays. So we're going to see a lot of subculture. And what's going to happen is a lot of those subcultures are then going to be mainstream and just, you know, seeing, okay, how can we profit off of this? So it does leave our youth in a bit of a disillusion, which is unfair to them because they're not really taught the proper way of how things roll out. And so, you know, that's why we have some people that say, okay, I'm gonna just put this up and it's just gonna blow up and I'm just waiting to see what happens. It's like basketball, you know. The dudes that play in the NBA, they don't just wait. Okay, I might play back. I'm gonna just shoot a couple shots and see what happens. And you know, no, they got trainers. They got it's a lot of an investment.
Putting the work.
Yeah. And like I said, and it even takes a team. It's a team, and it's every artist is a team effort. I haven't met my one artist that isn't. That doesn't have some type of nuclear unit or family unit or some type of structure where it's a team and it's a business. So, you know, just like how, you know, these young athletes that you can't think, okay, I'm just going to shoot a couple shots at a pickup game and I'm going to make it to the NBA. No, you got to play in high school. You got to play JV, varsity. You have to go through all of the, you gotta do AAU, gotta do boom, 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 boom. In the music business, in the entertainment game, or in any space, you have to go through, you have to go through that process. And I would suggest any entertainer, any content creator, you approach it like an athlete. And that way you kind of really understand what you're signing up for real. You know, kids don't really get that.
Yeah. Awesome. Damon, thank you so much for joining us. You can find Damon St. Cloud _ on Instagram. You can also look him up on Spotify, Apple Music, anything like that, and find his music there. Thank you so much for joining us. You want to find him, find the links below as well.
Yep. Yo, Chris, thank you for having me, man.
Thank you so much, Damon, for joining us. Thank you all for listening. If you want to stay in on the conversation, connect with us on social media at MadPropsPod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can also connect with us on Schnabel Studios on Facebook, IG, Twitter, LinkedIn, TikTok, and you can subscribe to YouTube. If you haven't seen already, we actually started our website, the Schnabel Studios website. It is schnabelstudios.com. There you can find Mad Props. You can find Sketching Up. You can find Southern Hospitality Offstage. There's a couple new podcasts that you can kind of preview on there. You can at least see what they are called and stuff like that that are coming. There's also articles you can now find. So all that stuff is on schnabelstudios.com. If you really want to stay up to date, go there, check out schnabelstudios.com. If not, you can follow Mad Props Pod or Schnabel Studios on any social media, and you can stay up to date that way as well. Please subscribe, comment, rate, share everything this podcast. The more we grow, the more we can do. And it all starts with our fantastic community. So please go out there and do all that stuff for that. We really appreciate all the support that we're getting, so we really appreciate you guys that are doing it. Stay locked to the Mad Prop socials as we have some really exciting things coming up. I really want to talk about it, but I don't want to talk about it yet. But there's some really fun stuff that's coming up that you're not going to want to miss. You're going to see it first on socials, so definitely make sure you're locked into the socials. Thank you again. If you learned something new, give us some Mad Props in the comments. Reply to us with Mad Props. Give us our props if you learned something new. We'll see you on the next one. Thank you so much for joining us. Damon, we really appreciate you being here. Peace out, everybody. We love you. See you later. This was Mad Props.